Mike B. from the Central Maryland / Bay Area. Give it up for Mike.
Addict named Mike. First, I'd like to just thank God for this this opportunity, and I'd like to thank the CPR CNA for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I don't mind doing the meeting on a little local level, but this right here is very intimidating for me. But I'm just getting myself out of the way and allow God to use me. And I hope that I can carry a clear and concise message of Narcotics Anonymous. And you know, it's always special to come to this convention, but this particular day is very special because 7 years ago, this same day, I met my then girlfriend, who is now my wife. You know, so you know, this day we celebrate 7 years of being together. You know, and with that being said, you know, my life really changed from that point forward because we talking about a bend of emotional sorrow. And I can remember growing up, man, I was never attached to any emotions, you know what I mean? And what I understand is that my emotions are directly connected to my feelings, you know? And it's kind of hard, man, because I'm so tall. Let me see if I can get this, because I ain't trying to bend over. Can you hear me? It's kind of difficult. All right. But yeah, my emotions are directly connected to my feelings, right? And what I do know today is all my feelings aren't fat, you know? But coming up, man, you know, I grew up in pretty much an abject state, man. I mean, we was always struggling. And my stepfather at that time, man, I mean, we took, like, the emotional abuse at that time, man, I was always talked down to. We got a lot of beatings, man. And I could never really express how I felt, you know what I mean? Because my mom at that time, it was just so much confusion going on in the house, man. And I never really could express to my mother how I really felt about a lot of stuff that was going on. And at a very young age, man, in the midst of all that, you know, I was sexually abused. And, you know, I never told anybody about that. You know what I mean? So at an early age, man, I was suppressing a lot of emotions and feelings that I just didn't know what to do with. You know, and as I grew up, man, I you know, drugs became my elixir. You know what I mean? I started using at 17, and the party didn't stop till 14 years later. You know, I had a lot of emotional bonds at that time. I can remember my first time when I went to court. You know, that's the last time I was in front of a podium like this, trying to, like, convince the judge not to send me to prison again. You know, and that's where I really, like, left all my feelings right there, man, because I was just, like, so tired of being, you know, like, it seems as though nobody, like, cared. You know what I mean? I always tried the victim, you know, and at that time, man, from that point on, you know what I mean, I developed a lot of resentments, like, I'm going to show you. And that's just the way I lived my life for a long time, you know. It's like a broad topic, right? And I'm going to try to, like, you know, stay on task with just here. When I was called and asked to do this, they referred me to the Living Clean book. And I read the Living Clean, and it referred me to the fourth step. You know, and the fourth step for me, man, it was like a purging of my soul, man, because it allowed me to really, like, get in touch with a lot of my emotions and feelings, you know what I mean? Because at that time, you know, I didn't know, the only thing I knew was good or bad, you know what I mean? If I was feeling bad, it's because I wasn't high. If I was feeling good, I was hot, you know? You know, after looking back and reading the Living Clean and then going back to the fourth step and referring to that, man, I can remember a lot of emotional up and downs I went through doing my fourth step. Because for one, when you just write it on paper, man, it just seemed like it came alive. And not only that, like, I had to go back and relive those events, you know what I mean? Because for me, it's hard to, like, write something on paper and not revisit that particular moment in time and what transpired. And through all that, man, it was only through the help of this fellowship, man, the God of my understanding and my sponsor, that I was able to, like, put all that stuff on paper, deal with my emotions, and then start to, like, get better at that, you know. But this has been a great process, man. And just talking about my emotions today, man, one thing I want to share, you know, it talks about a binge of emotional sorrow. And I can't really say that I've been on a binge, but something that I went through in early recovery was, you know, I never knew my father. I knew of him. We didn't have a relationship, but my grandfather raised me from a child up. You know, everything from teaching me how to tie my shoes, we fish together, we hunt together. My grandfather, I looked at him as my biological father. And I can remember, man, when I was always using, he would get locked up, he would always ask me, like, you know, Michael, why do you keep doing what you're doing? And I didn't even know. You know, I didn't know anything about NA. I didn't know it was a way out, man. I just knew that I had a whole bunch of feelings that I didn't know how to, you know, express. And my way of dealing with them was using. And, you know, when I came to this program, it was 2004. And in 2006, you know, I went to prison. I came home and, you know, went through the process of, you know, getting involved with the fellowship and everything. And me and my grandfather, we stayed close the whole time. And so at that time, he was, they was like prepping him for a knee surgery. He needed a knee operation. And he was confined to his room. He pretty much just looked out the window all the time. I would stop passing, visit him all the time. And, you know, we always had some real deep talks, man. And at that time, I was living the program. I was working steps, going to meetings. And he started to see me change a lot. And so, you know, one evening I went over and he was like, I need you to come over here tomorrow and take me and my grandmother to the hospital, because he was ready to go have a surgery, and he went in for a knee operation. And to make a long story short, and I picked him up, I took off from work, picked him up that day, and I can remember sitting there at the hospital with him, and we was just talking, laughing, and having fun. And I can remember when he was in a wheelchair, you know, with all the stuff on and everything. And I can remember when the nurse came out to get him, and she took him back behind the door. And I can remember, like, you know, I never shared this with anybody in my family, but something just told me that, you know, something wasn't going to be right. It felt like that was the last time I was going to see him. And that evening, I had a commitment. I had to go do an H&I commitment. And after I came out that particular commitment, I had a phone message on my phone saying I had to come to the hospital. And I went to the hospital, and he was having some difficult times, like recovering and all that. And to make a long story short, you know, I would go over there with him and help him do his exercise and everything. And one evening, he kept telling me he was in a lot of pain. And I had a connection with my grandfather like no other. So if he was hurting or something, man, I mean, I really like felt it. Because I mean, he was like my everything, man. He was the most important person in my life. And so that evening, I had left, and I was like, Grandpa, everything will be okay. You know what I mean? The doctors got you. He was like, I'm having a lot of pain. He would always call me Big Mike. He'd say, I'm in a lot of pain. I was like, man, you know, the doctor's going to take care of me. So I get, at that time, I was living in a recovery house, and on my way home, I got a call to go back to the hospital. And when I got back, my grandmother and the rest of my family was there, and it wasn't looking too good. You know, the doctor was, he was saying that his, you know, organs were starting to shut down and stuff like that, man. And I can remember just like this overwhelming feeling of emotions, man, just started to come about me. And I can remember pretty much asking the doctor, like, you know, what is it going to be? And like, let's just cut the chase. And he was like, I don't think you're going to make it. And I can remember like just pausing for a minute. And I went to the bathroom, I prayed, and I asked God, you know, that to allow his will to be done. You know, and I can remember by the time I came out the bathroom, my mother was standing there, and she was like, you got to hurry up and go back there. And when I get back there, he was like laying there, and I was looking at him, and I was like, you know. And in that situation, man, I mean, all these emotions are going through, and I'm like, come on, Grandpa, man, you got to pull out of this. You know, there's no way that just a simple knee out, this should be happening. And, you know, make a long story short, man, I'm just looking in his eyes, and I'm holding his hands and his breath. I mean, you know, the breath started to get fainter and fainter, man. And I'm like, man, look, you cannot do this. You know, this just cannot happen, right? And I mean, it just started to dissipate, man. And I can remember when he just took that last breath, and I was looking straight in his eyes, man. And I mean, it seemed like every I mean, I just felt empty at that time, and I really didn't know what to do. And my grandmother, she started screaming and hollering. But I did know what to do. You know, I went back to the recovery house. I called my sponsor. You know, he told me to go to a meeting and share. You know, and it's very cliche, but they say pain shares, pain less, man. And I can remember, like, getting back to the recovery house, man. And I mean, just overwhelming feelings of you know, why did this had to happen this way? You know, wanting to blame the doctors and saying they did all this stuff wrong. And I can remember, like, hitting my knees and praying, you know, and asking God, man, to just give me the strength to get through this, because emotionally I was a wreck, man. And I knew that I had to be strong for my mother and my grandmother and my other family members. So what I did was, man, I just showed up, you know, and I felt my emotions, you know what I mean, and start to process them, because I didn't know anything about, you know, being frustrated or angry, lonely, you know, all those, it's a plethora of emotions. I mean, I looked at all of them, man, it was overwhelming, but I just never really was in touch with it. I never knew how to process them, you know, and I shared that experience, man, because that was like a defining, not only a defining moment for me as an individual, but it was a defining moment in my recovery, because that's when I knew that this program is where I needed to be. You know, because I had tried a lot of other things prior to that. And the literature, as the literature says, you know, none of it was sufficient, you know. And what happened was, man, from that moment on, I really started to, like, dig into this program. You know, I really started to, like, strengthen my, cultivate the relationship with the God of understanding, because what I understand today is that, you know, as long as my relationship with the God of my understanding, you know, it is, I'm continuing to cultivate that relationship, that, excuse me, regardless of the emotions or feelings that I feel, I know that with the God of understanding, I'll be all right, you know. And you know, I tell you, I'm very, very nervous, man, because you know, for one, I don't like to fail, you know what I mean? In my mind, you need to sound good and all that, but what I do know today is the most important thing is that I stay clean, you know. And since I've been here, I haven't found it necessary to use, you know, and that's only by the grace of God through His fellowship, you know. And I'm so grateful to this program, man, because this program truly changed the trajectory of my life, you know what I mean? It's produced character in me that I didn't have. You know, I've never been able to be, you know, like, faithful or loyal, man, but, you know, through this process, man, a lot of things about me has really changed. You know, and emotionally, man, today I'm very emotionally stable today. You know, when challenges or problems come, man, I just, you know, pray and ask God. You know, and I have a network of people that I rely on today. You know, so it's a, you know, this has been a good process, man. And, you know, in the Living Clean, it talked about your emotions running amok, man, and it talks about you know, not getting caught up in that binge of sorrow. And I can remember for a little period of time, man, when I was going through my first step, man, I used to really beat myself up about a lot of the molestation and stuff like that. And I mean, man, I used to feel real bad. I mean, I really didn't want to be around nobody, because it made me feel less, man. You know, and then once you express what happened to somebody, it's like, man, are they gonna tell somebody? And it's just like those secrets, man, that die, that grow in the dark, but they die in the light of exposure, man. And I became vulnerable, man. I allowed myself to open up and allow somebody in to work through that stuff. Because I thought it was my fault, you know what I mean? But I mean, at the time when it happened, man, I wasn't physically capable of removing myself from that situation, you know. So, but I couldn't see that, and I needed somebody else to help me see it from a different perspective. I'm a little lost for words, to be honest with you. But I can just talk about recovery. Let me just go off topic. But you know, with that being said, man, recovery has afforded me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know what I mean? I can't adequately express what Narcotics Anonymous has done in my life. You know, I went from living to pillar to post to being a homeowner, an employee. And there's a lot of other things that are happening in my life, man, that without this fellowship, I don't think I've been able to do it. You know, I have some men that I sponsor who keep me on my toes, you know what I mean? And I show up for them. And not only that, man, I don't just, you know, like do this stuff in here, I take it home with me, you know. And sometimes that can be a little challenging because I like to be in control. I like to try to be like the boss of everything, my wife tells me. And I don't like to look at my part sometimes. But, you know, through this process, man, I've learned a lot, man. I became a better person. And I got a daughter that's 21 who, I mean, she just don't get it, man. She just want to do what she want to do. Regardless of, you know, what I feel or how it directly affect me. But I've been able to just, like, deal with that, you know, have patience and tolerance with her, you know. And I also have a son through my wife, and, you know, he can be a handful. You know, he's 17, he's driving, we just got him a car, he's driving. But you think his car went off the air, he don't want to get a job. You know, he got a little bit of money left in the bank. And he was at the barbershop the other day, and I was talking to him, because I don't know how the hell he still got money in his account. I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because he's been driving for a while, but he keep gas in his car, so. But, you know, just trying to get him to, like, you know, step up, you know, like, be a little more responsible, man. And, I don't know, man. I don't know where else to go from here because I feel like I'm just rambling. But throughout this process, man, I've been able to stay clean. I've been able to, you know, work on me, get better as a person. And just live life on life's terms. You know, when life shows up, man, I show up. I don't run. Today I know how to just, like, I pretty much face my fears. You know, and that's pretty much how I live today, man. I lean a lot on God and my understanding. Because I know that without God, man, that it's no me without God, pretty much. And it's only through this process, man, that working the 12 steps, man, that I've been able to cultivate a strong relationship with the God of my understanding, you know. You see, I got 7 minutes left. That's like awesome. And I hope that I pretty much shared stuff, man, that you know, could help somebody. But I got a little story I want to tell, man. There's two guys in the hospital. And one guy was blind, and the other guy on the other side could see. And every day, the guy that could see would tell the blind man would ask him to view. I mean, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. The blind man was closest on this side, the man that could see was on the other side. He couldn't see outside. So he would always, he couldn't set up anything. So he would always ask the blind man, like, he didn't know the man was blind. So he'd always ask him, like, what he see, and he was like, oh, it's sunny outside, and, you know, the weather's beautiful, and he would give him all these, you know, good pictures of how good it looked outside. So what happened was the blind man ended up dying, and the guy, when they come to move the blind man out, the guy that was on the other side of the room, he said, hey, you think I can get moved over there so I can see out the window? And the nurse told him, says, there is no window. And he was like, huh? He was like, well, why this guy always tell me it's sunny outside, you know, how beautiful it is. And what I equate that to is this fellowship. You know, regardless of our situation as a fellowship,
we can always find a way to encourage and help somebody else. You know, without even looking at our circumstances, we can always like press past what we need and help somebody else in the midst of their storm. And that's how I see this fellowship. And that's what it's been about for me, man, because a lot of times, a lot of people have helped me in my recovery, because when I first got here, I didn't take the ball and run with it, you know. And the last one, I'm going to shut it down after this, is two guys grooming on the island, right? And they've been stranded on this island for a while. So one guy said to his friend, said, man, if you go to that corner of the island and pray, then I'm going to go to this corner of the island and pray, see who prayers get answered first. So the guy that went to the left side of the island, you know, he prayed, like, God, you know what I mean? You know, give me some food, give me some shelter, and all this other stuff, man. And the other guy on the right side of the island was praying that the guy on the left side got everything he wanted. And so, you know, a ship come up to pick and to rescue the guy on the left side of the island. And so as he going on the ship to roll out, God said, hey, dude, you know, what about your friend over there? He was like, his prayers wasn't answered, you know what I mean? He didn't pray for it to be rescued and all this. And he said, well, the guy over there prayed that you got everything that you want, you know. And I think I messed this joke up, right, man. But to make a long story short, right? I think I messed up. But to make a long story short, it wasn't me that got me here. You know, it was like the fellowship. Every meeting, before every meeting, we said a serenity prayer, and after every meeting, we said a serenity prayer. You know, and I can remember a lot of times my grandmother was praying for me. And what I'm pretty much saying is the guy that was on the right side prayed that this guy got everything he wanted. So I don't never like put myself on a pedestal thinking that it was me that got me here. It was like y'all praying before the meeting and after the meeting. And a lot of other people that prayed for me in that process, you know. So, you know, with that being said, my name is Mike, and I'm an addict, and so let me share.